Lena Weichbrod of Deutsche Kreditbank, what is machine learning debugging?
So when we look at debugging, it's usually finding problems in software programs. So for machine learning, I typically have found two types of debugging. There's the normal software debugging, which is classic errors, obviously wrong output. But then we also have to take into account the user experience. Basically, you see a really bad outcome for a specific user experience, and you want to find the reason and you want to fix it.
Welcome to Inference, an AI business podcast by Silo AI. I'm Ville Hulkko, co-founder of Silo, and with me today is Lena Weichbrod. Lena is the machine learning lead engineer, pioneering machine learning operations at Deutsche Kreditbank, and a former senior engineer at Zalando's recommendation platform. With a passion for system usability and making machine learning actually work for customers, Lena began specializing in machine learning monitoring, debugging, and crisis process development. Lena, it's a privilege to have you with us. Welcome.
Hey, Philip. Thank you for having me.
So Lena, you've built your career around designing both software and AI systems that are emphasizing usability. And as a flip side, I know you've taken meticulous steps to considering diagnostics and just a bucketful of sanity checking overall in the process. So can you introduce the core differences in your mind between debugging machine learning and debugging regular software?
So in general, I found that in machine learning, the debugging is harder because we are dealing with the tip of the iceberg problem. In classical engineering, we mostly have alerts and very well-defined ways to tell if a system is working as intended. And typically, when we don't see an alert, we don't have a problem. However, with machine learning, that's typically not the case. There are several reasons for that. One of the reasons is that we can't always fully tell if it's working. With classical software engineering, if you have a 200 response from a service, you know it's working. There's a clear technical definition that nothing went bad, and probably the response is okay. But with machine learning, we're solving a specific problem, and typically the business or the user defines if it works. So for example, if you're getting a recommendation back from the service, what makes it like a really bad recommendation? So sometimes the criteria are quite clear. So for example, when you have a fallback to top sellers and recommendations, then it's probably not working well. Or if a sales forecast is off by a really high amount. But sometimes the criteria are more subtle. So for example, you might not get a top seller, but your personal style might be completely not understood by the recommender. So this could be a really bad recommendation. And I also have a really interesting problem from my previous work at Zalando, which was an e-commerce store. We had a colleague talking to us on the chat, and she said she saw the same recommendations, exactly the same, on each page. And when we were like, oh my God, everybody is seeing the same stuff. So we checked, and actually our pages look completely fine. And what was happening is that there was a personalized size filter that did not work correctly in her case. And I can explain later how to debug that and how many people are also possibly affected by such kind of bug. And that's very interesting to look at these specific usability problems from users. In traditional software, you often have one defined behavior for everybody who uses the service. So for example, you have a flight booking platform that either works, you can book the flight, or it doesn't work. But for machine learning, you can have an algorithm working quite well on some of the subgroups, but quite badly on another subgroup. So you can see there some differences make it a bit more challenging.
Okay, so there's definitely a visibility difference, if you will, when we talk about machine learning debugging versus classical software debugging. But if we talk about machine learning usability debugging, how do you go about doing that?
First, you need to decide how much do you need. That depends on the type of machine learning product that you run. If it's quite unclear if your output is correct, or the correctness is quite delayed, your feedback, then you need more. Recommender systems is a typical case where it's not really clear how good you are, or identifying people or objects and images. In this case, you have it in the training data, but you don't get immediate feedback for your inference data. And a case where you would need less effort for usability debugging would be you have a forecast and tomorrow you know exactly how good your forecast from yesterday is. Then you're pretty clear on quality and you don't have that many unknown subsets. You can still look at subsets, but you would need less effort. So that sets the frame of how much effort you need to spend on this. And then you think of these two measures I would personally recommend. One would be the proxy indicators for quality. For example, you think of, okay, how can you tell it's roughly going okay? There's an example by Spotify where they sort the homepage in a personalized way. And they thought, okay, how can I tell that the new algorithm is a lot worse or there's a new technical problem? And they came up with one proxy that says, what's the rank in this algorithm of a user's most used box? Since it's a quality heuristic, you would think, okay, if I love this box, it should not be ranked low. I want to have it convenient. I love it. Every algorithm, no matter how it works, should roughly pick up that I love this kind of genre or artist. So this is one thing, automatic proxy indicators, and you monitor them. And the second measure I would recommend is that you run weekly or maybe bi-weekly bad experience, what the fuck analysis, how I call it, sorry. So basically what you do is, you pick one really bad experience by a user and then you debug it in a technical way to find the root cause and find how many users are affected of this. Can I generalize this bad experience and can I understand and fix it together with the product team? In general, I found we need one or two more tools than you would expect for typical software analysis and debugging, where you would use, for example, logs, etc. Here in this case, for machine learning, it's really helpful that you also log the data that is incoming into your service and outgoing. So you have this historic input and outputs. And metadata is very important. So for example, I recommend to use more metadata than for normal services, the app version, mobile versus desktop, countries, etc. That will really help you with the debugging. And then another thing to think about is where you would get these bad examples from. So one thing we actually did, you know that from software engineering when they say eat your own dog food. So that's what you do. You check your own recommendations or whatever service you run. You see what it gives you. And you also source feedback from colleagues. You check bug reports. I also checked app store reviews. And some apps also have apps or websites offer you feedback buttons for users or surveys, questionnaires, etc., where you can get feedback from users who are unsatisfied with what you give them. And then what you apply is a really structured format. So this is about best practices. I like to recommend to use a very structured format. Sometimes in ML, we look at a thing and we say, I have a vaguely human understanding why this happened, and it's usually wrong, the intuition. So what you want is a very structured approach from what you observed to the real root causes of the final user output in a post-mortem kind of format.
So when we talk about the flaws in the process, so in your talk, you've divided them into kind of engineering flaws, such as implementing the pipeline in the wrong way, and then logical or qualitative flaws, such as a recommender system giving out a bad recommendation. So in managing production level systems, you need to be on lookout for both, essentially. How do you approach monitoring these?
It's actually a bit funny that both are a little bit hidden in machine learning, I find. Maybe some of you have written the Rules of Machine Learning document by Google, where they give a case where they forgot to refresh a certain table for 6 months. And then when they found that problem, which is an engineering type of problem. And they refreshed the data in that table and it gave them a 2% install rate in the App Store. So when I read that, I had to laugh a lot. That really reminded me of the typical things that can happen. So the engineering bugs, I just go by experience. So if you have an ML engineer with experience and you read up on the latest blogs, that what people speak about, what they encounter, typical things, for example, you compare the live data distribution with the training distribution before you go live, that I have rarely seen that to be identical. So this is a typical bug that you need to fix. And then you monitor different types of bugs that you know that can arise. I have given a talk at Recommender Systems Conference a while ago where I go a little bit in detail on the types of bugs. So it's a bit too detailed here, but there you refer to the state-of-the-art blogs. And for qualitative bugs, I typically recommend these two steps, which is the quality proxy indicators that I mentioned and the bad experience postmortems. And that should already set you off on a good path to discover a lot of the problems.
That's really interesting. And I remember one of the first times when at Silo we encountered this kind of a significant logical bug, if you will. So we were building a computer vision-based condition monitoring system for a sewage pipeline. And after training the first system with, you know, as I recall, with the basic 80-20 data split of annotated video material, our flaw detection performance was like 97% accurate. Like right off the first iteration, just phenomenal performance. Like, I suppose there was about 10 seconds of this kind of, yeah, we got this mentality, feel good. But before the reality of kind of this can't be true, then started to, I suppose, seep in. And what was visible right in front of our eyes, but what we absolutely didn't realize at the time, was that in this case, the training video data, the flaws were annotated into the video itself. And I mean, like the text was burned into the pixel layer of the video as planches, not as separate like SRT subtitle files. So in essence, we taught the system to read and not perhaps to kind of detect flaws in traditional sense. And it kind of goes back to the problem because, you know, in that case, because it was in the pre-training and POC mode, we had life easy because we had the 80-20 data split, so you can get objective metrics on the performance. But, you know, what you're saying is the fact that when you have a production-grade system, you don't necessarily get to enjoy those benefits, so you need to be constantly on the lookout for a proxy or some sort of a side indicator that would give you a signal about the performance.
One use case where I actually have something like a live test set. So sometimes you get afforded this luxury. So in this case, we're rejecting credit applications. And what I can do is I can say for X percent of the traffic, I will not reject them and see what is the final outcome. And then I can compare like a live test set. I've also known it from domains like fraud, where they typically let through a small percentage to calibrate their models. But that is, you know, the rare case. The typical case is where you do not have that. And then you're completely right. You need some form of proxy life to be able to detect how it's going. And ideally, what you want is in real time.
On that note, you've talked a lot about the complex nature of machine learning bug ownership. So could you elaborate on your thinking around this?
Yeah, this is actually something I grapple a bit. So who owns a bug and who goes to hunt for the bugs in machine learning? So typically the engineer, from what I've observed at least, feels responsible for the technical stack. And as long as the technical stack doesn't show alerts, where we have this iceberg problem that we talked about, then they don't start looking for bugs in the ML. And the business people don't necessarily understand the machine learning model and typical problems, for example, that we can have problems just on the subset of the traffic. And you would think that the machine learning scientist would be a really good person to look into these bugs. But here I have seen that some colleagues are very interested in the developing the algorithm, and that makes perfect sense. And even there, promotion at work or how they are graded in their job is often measured in terms of their algorithmic contribution, not necessarily how well they keep the stack going and did they find a usability problem. So somehow I've seen that go and hunting for these ML bugs and usability problems has no natural owner as of yet, from what I've observed. I think I would like the business team to take more of an interest in improving the quality, very similar to what other industries are already doing. Let's say car manufacturing, they're really optimizing the process and the quality output. And they don't necessarily need to understand how the machine learning algorithm works to find these bad experiences or to have an idea what means good quality to them. And maybe as a side note, we can also think of adapting ML practitioner HR-related judgments so they don't only include the algorithmic contribution, but also like more broadly caring about the final product.
Yeah, that's the tricky part. And I suppose that makes it kind of a double-edged sword, right? Because if you think about typically, you know, what machine learning is, it's a catalyst within a business process, which means that in order to monitor that process, you would need to have a substance side expert having a look at the data, having a look at the process, having a look at everything that is going through, because they, by definition, should have the best understanding about what is valid and what is starting to be noisy in the data set. But also at the same time, it's completely process dependent. So there are instances where even the best process side expert can't process the data or can't be aware of the system, which means that you need an engineer to do that. And then to kind of find that perfect balance in between, it's probably like you're saying that there's no silver bullet to this. It's completely case dependent.
As a general thing, I would think that the business side or whoever is the end user who wanted that product, they have usually a clear understanding of what to them the quality is. I think they can own that and force the priorities on monitoring and improving that quality. I think that would be an excellent first step.
And with that, we're starting to reach the end of our episode. And as is customary in inference, we do like to predict the future. So Lina, you have a strong focus in what is defined as ML debugging and model robustness. What do you see as the upcoming trends in these?
So I see a great amount of movement in the tooling space, for example, in machine learning as a platform, full platform services, but also data monitoring libraries and open source libraries. I'd like to now see that management side and the best practices side will join this development and also comes forward with more formalized best practices. So as my takeaway messages for you, the listener, I would say that what we have in machine learning is sort of an iceberg phenomenon, and the quality issues is the iceberg. And you're the operator of the Titanic, and I'd like you to help you to avoid a collision. And that's why I recommend to you strongly, try out to do these automated checks of quality heuristics and do a weekly or bi-weekly bad experience analysis. And I'd like to call to you product people that you really don't need to understand the model or the algorithm to drive the quality. A purely business and user-driven approach is enough to discuss and improve the quality together with your engineering team. And try it out and let us know. Or you can also, I invite you to talk to me personally. Let me know how this is going for you.
Lina, thank you so much for coming on Inference. And for anyone listening, please do stay tuned for the follow-up episode on this, where we'll be taking a bit of a more deeper dive into machine learning postmortems and the practicalities around debugging. And with that, thank you once more for coming on. And for anyone listening, have a great day.